And good evening, I'm Melissa Idris. You're watching Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. First detected in South Africa in January, the Omicron subvariants BA4 and BA5 have since led to surges in both COVID-19 cases and hospitalization around the world. Now, in Malaysia, the health ministry says that it has warned of a resurgence of COVID-19 cases, saying that it is very likely that the BA5 subvariant has already spread throughout the country. Now, how should health policymakers and also the public be thinking about mitigating this next wave? Should a second booster be required? Let's pose these questions to our guests tonight. First up is Dr. Vinod Balasubramaniam. He's a senior lecturer and lead of the Infection and Immunity Research Strength at the Geoffrey Chia School of Medicine and Health Sciences of Monash University, Malaysia. Dr. Vinod, welcome to the show. Can you begin by telling us a little bit about the BA5 subvariant and how it is different from its forebearers?
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me again. Now, I'll start off with some statistics. With more than 500 million infections and more than 6 million deaths worldwide, you know, COVID-19 pandemic has emerged as one of the most devastating human pandemics. When will this end? Right? An important question in many of us for more than 2 years. Simply because of one word, mutations. Okay, viruses mutate because they are constantly making copies of themselves in enormous numbers. And each time it's transmitted from one person to another, chances of making errors are extremely high, right? And this was the case for the current rapidly spreading BA lineage or the Omicron lineage, right? Representing almost all the current cases worldwide. Okay, now because Omicron has spread swiftly and, you know, it had many opportunities to mutate and because of that, it has also acquired specific mutations of its own, right? And these have given rise to several sublineages of subvariants. The first two were labeled BA1 and BA2, and now the current list includes BA1, 1, BA3, BA4, and BA5. Now, what are the major differences, right? Now, if you look at the two major subvariants of Omicron, which is rapidly spreading, the BA4 and BA5, right? They are similar to their predecessors, BA2 and BA1, but they have unique mutations. They have more mutations in their spike protein, which enable them to, you know, evade immunity from vaccinations, which enable them to, you know, bind to host cells differently, right? Because of that, their ability to escape antibody, right, immunity, much, much, much higher, right? Okay. Including in people who have been vaccinated and boosted.
Okay. All right. So speaking about this, just to kind of expand on the escaping antibodies, or escaping immunity. So you're saying that those who have previously been infected with COVID, other variants, are not likely to get that much protection from a reinfection of this particular BA5 subvariant. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Now, we have recent data showing threefold reductions of neutralizing antibodies, right? Antibodies which are free-flowing in our body after vaccination or infection, right? Threefold reduction of neutralizing antibody titers reduced, right? By infection against BA4 and 5 compared to BA1 and 2, which are already substantially lower. So chances of breakthrough infections with these two variants are much, much higher.
Okay. Dr. Vinod, what are the consequences of reinfection? What do we know about that?
Now, we know that, you know, there are a lot of, you know, this false sense of security in the public that, you know, despite, you know, I'm vaccinated, I'm boosted, you know, reinfections are not going to cause me, you know, severe disease or severe symptoms, right? There are recent data, right, in Japan, for example, have shown that, you know, in cell culture, in animal-based experiments, that BA4 and 5 is able to replicate more efficiently in the lungs than the previous Omicron strains. And in hamster models, for example, it developed into more serious illness. Of course, we need to wait for, you know, recent more data in humans to confirm this. But, you know, chances of people experiencing symptoms, the symptoms previously that they did not get, you know, fever, you know, body aches, sneezing, flu-like symptoms are extremely high. Now, these are people who have been boosted. How about people who have not completed their booster doses or people who have not vaccinated, right? Mm. Severity will increase accordingly.
Okay. What do we know of the current vaccines, whether they have the same level of efficacy against these new variants?
Now, thank you so much for this question. Now, one thing we should remember, although current vaccines are based on Wuhan strain, the first generation of vaccines, will still provide some protection against serious illness and death. Like we explained before, chances of reinfection are extremely high with the current BA4 and BA5 variants, right? We will experience mild to moderate symptoms, right? Especially those who are in vulnerable group, the elderly, individuals with comorbidity, children, immunocompromised. However, it still protects us from death and severity. If you look at the mortality rate, right, it is not as high where Delta was at its peak.
Right. And okay, so let's talk a little bit about some of the boosters that are out there. I'm very curious to know whether there might be Omicron-specific boosters in our near future. And how do we think about that? Because again, you know, many people have taken different types of vaccines. They have a kind of personal, you know, it's actually, I guess, kind of now your own kind of personal calendar and your own personal vaccine mix. How should the wider population be thinking about that?
Thank you. Thank you. Now, reinfections, right, are going to be pretty inevitable until we have vaccines or widespread mandates that are going to prevent cases rising again. Okay, that's going to be hard. The second one's going to be hard. But thankfully, right, a majority of vaccine companies, both Moderna, Pfizer, for example, have started trials for their bivalent vaccine, right? A vaccine which has the original Wuhan strain and also Omicron-specific strains. So we will have protection against Omicron variants with this vaccine. Trials are expected to go really, really soon.
Okay. You talked a little bit about whether this should be kind of widespread, universal coverage. Should we be thinking about, just in terms of policy, public health policy, is universal coverage necessary for booster shots or second dose booster shots, the fourth dose technically of vaccines, beyond just the elderly and the high-risk groups and the vulnerable? Should we be thinking about returning to a universal coverage approach?
Brilliant question, Melissa. Now, one important thing to consider is we are still waiting to see if BA4, BA5 outcompetes everything else, other sub-lineages that we have now. Now, the problem we have is we have competition between sub-lineages of Omicron. We don't have between variants, right? So we are still waiting, although results tend to show that it is going to outcompete, especially BA5, right? Now, if that happens, I think a fourth universal booster dose for everyone, is possible.
Right. And possible.
Simply because we don't want to overburden the hospitals. I know hospital capacity, is still within manageable range, but I don't think so. It will be the case once BA5 overtakes or BA4 overtakes.
Okay. And how would you think about that? Especially if we were to look at some of the lessons that we learned in the previous vaccine and the booster rollout, how should we think about when to get boosted and which vaccine to choose? Do you have any preliminary thoughts about this?
Now, the best vaccine, of course, whatever which is available to you, if you ask me, right? Number one. Number two, when, it's a very tricky question, simply because we are still, playing the waiting game, right? We're still looking at severity, right? And we know that cases are increasing dramatically, right? Sometimes it goes down and it does not reflect that, because we don't have that much of testing that we used to have when we had Delta. That's another thing we should consider. So the actual numbers may not be the one which is reflecting infection in community. We just had a huge, festival, and I don't think so. The numbers reflect what we are having now. And we also testing has reduced dramatically. Right? We don't use to test as we do previously. So, community transmission is at its peak, if you ask me. And, it still remains, how much of our government hospitals can manage. So that will be the answer, yeah.
I, I, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this question, but you said a little bit earlier that reinfections may be inevitable if we don't have specific variant vaccines, right? How should we be thinking about this? I know that we can't prevent all transmissions, but should we still care about preventing infections, reducing the spread, and how do we do this?
Absolutely. You know, as I reiterated many times before, vaccines themselves are insufficient to stem transmission, right? These vaccines were never developed to stop transmission, right?
Right.
But they were developed to reduce transmission, right? So increase in cases definitely should be expected whenever public health and social measures are lifted, right? Irrespective of vaccination coverage, right? So much Malaysia especially, you know, and much of the world still need to continue effective measures, you know, as we bring transmission down, you know, whatever we had before, and we had all the weapons before, you know, the mask mandate, you know, although not mandate, but, you know, it should be our own responsibility, right? Wearing masks, you know, proper SOPs, hand hygiene, proper coughing etiquette, so on and so forth, right? I think it's going to be part of our life until the virus becomes endemic, right? And the virus, you know, to a surprise to me, has adapted very well with human, especially through immune selection pressure and so on and so forth, right? And I think it'll be some time before we eradicate this virus, right? Sure. And it's okay. Still if, it's a big if, and this virus is going to remain in the community, right? Regardless of its the way it causes severity or transmission in terms of rate, okay. Right?
Yeah. Well, you said to keep many tools, many weapons in our arsenal. One of them has been the first antiviral drug, Paxlovid, if I'm not mistaken. Tell us about Paxlovid and how it might help in this fight against COVID.
But definitely, you know, Paxlovid is one of the many weapons that we have. We also have, you know, WHO and FDA approved antibodies. We have Janus kinases, right? Repurposed drugs. And when you talk about Paxlovid, you know, it's brilliant. It should be prescribed within 5 days of symptoms to get the best chance of success, right? And results have shown that taking pills within this window, early infection, have lowered the risk of severe illness or hospitalization by 89%, especially in the vulnerable group. So I think, okay, you know, combination of Paxlovid vaccine and also, you know, safety SOPs should be able to get us through.
Okay. Dr. Vinod, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. Appreciate your time. Dr. Vinod Balasubramaniam there from Monash University, Malaysia. We're going to take a quick break here on Consider This. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, thanks so much for staying with me. I'm Melissa Idris. You're watching Consider This. We're discussing the Omicron BA5 subvariant, which the Health Ministry warns is very likely to have already spread throughout the country and may lead to a surge in COVID-19 cases and hospitalization. So how should health policymakers and the public be thinking about mitigating this next wave? Joining us now is Professor Dr. Sharifa Izzat Wanputeh. She's a specialist in health economy and public health at Universiti Kebangsaan Malaysia. Dr. Izzat, symptoms of the BA5 variant are said to be less severe than the first Omicron wave. I'm just wondering how you would address, what would you say to those who have the impression that it's fine to get infected if the disease is mild, that we just should treat it like a normal flu? What would you say to that?
Right. Thank you, Melissa, for the questions. It has been, some of the research have shown it is less severe, but it's very highly transmissible. When that happens, you know, some of the research has shown that the virulence is less compared with Delta and so forth and the early Omicron wave, as you mentioned correctly. However, we cannot take it to heart that this is going to be less hitting and things like that, because we don't know our risk. That's one of the problems. The second thing about the so-called the BA5 and BA4, in fact, it's able to evade the immune system, meaning that whatever vaccine that has been put into you, they are able to, you know, evade that immune system in a way, so that makes you more susceptible. And of course, with the waning neutralizing antibody that we have, you know, most of us have had the vaccines, even the booster, maybe about 6 months, 4 months ago. So that will actually show some declining in antibody as well. So meaning that it makes us more susceptible to this virus. So, and we know that most of the cases that comes out are obviously the infected people would come up with so-called the category 1, 2, but a few would actually progress into category 3, 4, and 5. So this is where the severity, or basically the risk of you getting admission and also getting ventilated, is even higher. Of course, now, you know, in Malaysia, we have other problems as well. We have a huge number of people having multiple comorbidities, multiple problems as well, diabetic hypertension, obesity, and so forth. So that puts us at risk, especially if you're a smoker, you have existing lung problems, and so forth. You might have also COVID, but you don't show the symptoms so much. This is also another worrying thing, because you can actually transmit it to other people without actually knowing that you actually have that. So coming back to some of the changes in SOP, or probably, you know, some of the reinstatement of public health programs that should be in, I think we are already wearing masks indoors. I think that should actually, you also need to wear outdoors, especially if there's a huge number of people around, maybe, you know, majlis and things like that. And we also need to test more regularly. The latest positivity rate from our COVID Now website is about 7.5, like that, 7.1. And that shows that a lot more people are testing positive. Now, that shows that more people are having this virus, and it's actually, you know, going around and so on. We are in the transition of endemicity, and we know that, you know, once you go into endemicity, that means the virus is going to be in the community. But there's still risk of you getting infected, and there's still risk of you getting infected and also warded and so forth. So again, for those who have not got their vaccination or get their booster, you should get your booster. If you are able to, you know, go for your second booster, please go ahead and get your second booster, especially for those who are elderly, for those who are immune compromised, having multiple morbidities and so forth.
Dr. Issa, what about the rest of the population? Should universal coverage for boosters, the fourth dose, be not just for vulnerable groups and those with comorbidities, but universal coverage that covers everyone, back to the way we had with the first round of the National Immunization Program? If from a public policy perspective, do you think that's necessary?
Well, it's not surprising that many countries have actually go ahead with that, Melissa. You know, they have actually proposed for the so-called the second booster or the fourth dose in their population. But at this point in time, for Malaysians, I suppose this is not something which can be done compulsory. I think this is still optional, you know, that you are able to go ahead for your vaccination. And please do, if you have the options, to go ahead for your fourth vaccination. I think at one point in time, if the rate is actually very high, it's increasing very rapidly, and we see that this is going to be another crisis, I think the compulsory will come a bit later.
Okay. And if that does happen, then are there lessons from that first rollout that you think might be applicable? Because if I remember correctly, the take-up rate for, you know, the first booster was not very encouraging, at least at first. Are there practical ways that you think might be, that we can learn from previous mistakes that might increase participation this time around?
Right. I think a lot of countries have actually imposed some incentive, Melissa, incentive for vaccination, coming to the clinics or coming to obtain their boosters and so forth. Different countries have different so-called incentive. It can be some tax incentive. It can actually be giving monetary values for the transportation and so on. So that would be something in line with Malaysia as well. We can actually do that and propose incentive as well. But again, the rate of the booster, we're talking about the first booster, is still below 50%. And when that happens, my thinking is that where are the vulnerable, and especially for the elderly, we need to make sure that they are basically protected. And we need to have an inventory of elderly people in this community, because they are at risk. We need to protect them. And of course, those who are able to access healthcare and obtain their second booster, this is very important for them to come forward.
Right.
Dr. Izzet, wait, you said less than 50% of the elderly, less than 50% have taken up, the population have taken up the first booster dose, the third dose. Can I ask you, what are the implications of waning efficacy of vaccines? So you take a vaccine in 2001, and by the end of 2022, you take a vaccine last year in 2021, by the end of, say, 2022, that vaccine, the efficacy, your protection would have waned significantly. How would public health policymakers think about this timeline? And is it up to the personal responsibility, or is this an issue for public health policymakers?
Well, the declining vaccine efficacy is not only for Malaysia. It is happening worldwide. As you know, that most of the vaccines that we obtained are done in either at the end of 2021, or some of us are early 2022. And there are reports that shows that, you know, some of the vaccine efficacy may go down up to 40%, you know, some research will go down to 60 and so forth and so forth. Meaning that the end point is that we are actually facing vaccine declining efficacy based on some of these reports. So when that happens, there is a need for us to boost our vaccine back again. This is where the second booster comes into play, also called the fourth vaccination. When it comes into the public policy, not only vaccinations are the main stay of so-called management, other management things like SOPs, you know, wearing masks, you know, washing your hands, ensuring that you don't go into congregations, you know, into big meetings without actually testing. And, you know, these are simple policies that are actually effective. And other countries have actually done that. They have actually done working from home. They are implementing working from home again for some of the population, you know, rotating schools, children again, you know, in some countries as well. So meaning that there are other policies as well for management of COVID. It's not just vaccination, although vaccination would be so-called the prime or basically the most important, but there are other sorts of management in place that we have, the country can actually look at that as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is very reminiscent of the conversations that we had at the start of the pandemic. But now I feel that perhaps there's some complacency that has set in as as we learn to live with the virus, a lot of things have reverted to the way it was pre-pandemic. I do want to ask you, now that lockdowns are no longer part of the playbook, but what does the high number of infections and reinfections mean for a society? When we think about, you know, high workplace absences, if you couple that with increased cost of living, that means that more people feel like they have to work when they're sick. Are there conversations being had, Dr. Izzat, about the long-term impact of widespread infections and what this will have on society, the impact it will have on society?
So, Melissa, there's so many aspects that you mentioned just now that we can dwell on that. If you're looking at health, the most important thing would be the emergence of long COVID. You know, long COVID may actually occur in, there's some reports that says it's about 15 to 20% of the patients, or basically people who have obtained or basically got infected with COVID. So if you look at the number of population that has been infected with COVID, it's about nearly 4.6 million people having infected with COVID. I'm not talking about the one that died as well, but this is talking about, you know, so if you took 20% from that, that is already about 900,000 population plus. So if you can imagine 900,000 population that would actually present with some sort of long COVID, and long COVID can present, you know, at some point in time, and it's quite difficult to diagnose and things like that, they may actually be have impact on their attendances, on their MCs, you know, not able to work, difficulty in focusing and so forth. So this would lead to, you know, loss of productivity, and basically it's going to get worse if they have also financial constraint. You know, Melissa, there's a lot of people, you know, we have our B40 so-called, we have our M40 and things like that. You know, these are the people most at risk of not only financial but also health impact, and this is something that the government needs to look at more diligently.
Thank you, Dr. Izzat, for bringing that up, and appreciate your time and your insights. Thank you for sharing that with us tonight. That was Professor Dr. Sharifah Izzat Wanputeh. She's a specialist in health economy and public health at UKM. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.